FM in Port Townsend, our weekly chat with Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow. We're putting a little cream in our coffee today.
That we are, Tim. That's a great start to the conversation. Well done.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So coffee bureaucracy now is kind of an informal chat on things that are happening in Port Townsend. And I did tune into the Zoom City Council meeting, your last business meeting, where you gave out some good news, some of which we talked about previously on hires. So a few points of good news that you gave to the City Council. Has there been any update on those hires, or are you free to release those names yet?
Oh man, I love giving KPTZ the scoop, and I am one step closer in that I have now finished off all of the reference checks for both candidates. However, these fantastic individuals who are about to join the city team need to inform their own agencies and go through that process. So I am like, I'm hoping hours, maybe a couple days away, Tim, but I'll be sure to bring it up next week.
That is a topic for next week. One thing that I that was news to me, and maybe I got this wrong, but you did talk about hiring a limited term or a part-time staff member to dealing with the upcoming issues and the golf course. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a full-time position at the director level, actually. And to me, it reflects what we've taken through a process with City Council since July of last year when we were talking about our work plan. And there's a constellation of things, including the golf course, but also including the Mountain View campus, the future of aquatics in Port Townsend and maybe beyond, how our volunteer program can be amplified, how we take care of our parks and trail system. I mean, there's just a number of things that all kind of swirl around the same general topic of how we as a community work together on some of these issues that frankly are of high importance for a lot of people and particularly to young people and families as well. So how do we get moving on a cohesive conversation on that? Particularly in light of there is no parks director anymore. That was a position that was vacated more than a year ago by Alex Wisniewski. I mean, Alex was excellent. He went to Kitsap County where he's parks director there and actually he's lives there. So it's a little bit easier commute for him. And since then we've really been taking stock of what do we really need and what do we need to move on moving forward. And to me, engaging this community and what the future of golf course, parks, trails is one of those big important conversations. So we'll be starting that work on April 1st. No joke, no fooling. That's when this new hire will begin her work.
April 1st. Well, if the past is any indication, there will be a lot of public comment and input about those issues that you just spoke about. The golf course, for one, going back to the early days of Brunel, remember, there was quite a bit of controversy swirling around the decisions the city has to make on the golf course. And I've been reading a lot lately of people being concerned about not having enough youth activities, I suppose, is the way to put it, in Port Townsend. So will this person also be focused on that?
Yeah, I mean, the reason why this is not a coordinator role or, somebody kind of buried in the limited hierarchy here. This is somebody who needs to be front and center, working very visibly and publicly with core partners of the city and actually every member of the community who wants to participate. So there is a seat at the table for everybody. We need to design the process. It's my hope that pushing this until now, we were going to be crawling out of COVID, but we're not quite there yet. But I do envision this year, we'll have a chance to gather again, collaborate again, and really think about what our vision is over the coming years. And it's not work that's going to happen just all in 2022. This is work that will continue for the next couple of years as we firm up a direction and possibly the funding sources that need to accompany it for us to be successful.
Well, on another note, one of the issues that good news that you brought up were the expanded hours at the City Hall back from. Yeah. Can you talk
about
that?
We had to pare back and then we're back again. I think the other exciting hours is that we're bringing back you know, library hours. And so that's, it's exciting to see new hours posted on the library site, where we continue to extend further into the community in terms of hours and access. So that's always a good news story too.
And I do believe that we're looking at some Sunday hours from 1 to 5. Is that correct?
Library? Yes. The library has not been open on a Sunday for a while. It's a really important time for a lot of people, and we're back.
Well, it's good to coincide with our community reads. And, you know, we realize the importance of these libraries on so many different levels once we don't have them and they are closed. So good to see us inching back a bit. According to Dr. Allison Berry, we will be moving a little bit forward on some of the COVID restrictions in mid-March, perhaps.
So, yeah, here's hoping, right?
Yes.
So get your vaccination, get your booster, and let's get back at it.
Other things that you brought up during the city council meeting are the bills that are currently in legislation that may affect us here in Port Townsend. Do you have any insight into those bills?
You know, one of them I mentioned was the middle housing bill, and that's something that I continue to see move through. I think it's in, I want to say it's in the Rules Committee now. As of yesterday, it's been marching through. You know, there's a substitute bill that has been passing through, and I guess this is both slightly surprising, I'll just admit, because the Association of Washington Cities, we tie our boats pretty closely to theirs, and their legislative agenda. They've come out in opposition. I know that as a council body, the council has not, you know, taken a particular stand on any specific piece of legislation, but I can say individuals, including our mayor, have spoken in favor of why this bill would be beneficial for cities across, you know, the state. And really the idea is that there's this missing middle housing where if we increase some degree of density, which, you know, we've done really well here a while ago in Port Townsend. We were the first jurisdiction, I think the first in the state, to pass an ADU ordinance to allow the construction of ADUs on single family lots. And that was a big step forward in increasing the number of people who can live. I think this bill moving through the legislature is attempting to do the same thing across all jurisdictions. And I'll be honest, it's going to make some cities, including ours, scramble to try to catch up. But, you know, I can't think of too many more urgent issues than housing supply and availability and affordability.
And I do remember that ADU piece going through early through the city council. How did that pan out? I mean, have ADUs increased as a result of that?
Well, I don't have the data in front of me, but I can say that it's quite known that ADUs are, you know, there's a number of them here. Some have been grandfathered in and able to be used as, you know, sort of Airbnb type rentals. But, you know, council actually made a decision again, both before I arrived on scene here, to restrict that, you know, for all ADUs. And limit that to 28 straight days of rental. And the idea there at the time, and I think still now, was, you know, of course everyone wants to come to a place like Port Townsend to vacation and, you know, enjoy a little time away, maybe from the I-5 corridor or wherever you might be. But those are very real dwellings that people could be living in. And so I think the council at the time, I don't, you know, can't get into their minds, but I suspect that they were trying to make that housing stock available to people who would live there and contribute to our local community.
Well, good. And I hope that, you know, that the idea has a future. It'll be interesting to see how the legislation pans out and our response to it. This is Port Townsend. We sometimes do things in a little bit of a different way. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah.
Going back to our latest, I hesitate to call it the Sims Gateway project.
Yeah, sure.
It continues to generate concern. And I received I don't know if I would call it. It's basically a press release. And I don't know if you received this also, John. We're just, sometimes we catch up on the air.
We do.
Live. This one is from the Poplar Alliance. Uh-huh. And the reason that it is of interest to me is that it is, given the demonstrations and ways that people have expressed their views recently, well, I just may come out and say it, on masking mandates especially, It sounds like a particularly civilized demonstration that we are likely to see in Port Townsend. And I'll just read you, I'll just paraphrase a bit. And so this community group is going to make hearts available to be signed by people that love the Poplars. And you know who you are out there. And regardless of where we fall on this, I do kind of appreciate the way that it's done. So the hearts will be made available and signed by people and then hung on the poplar trees along Sims Way this weekend to be eventually presented to the city council as a form of compassionate petition. So there's that. I haven't had a chance to check the veracity of this, but I have no reason to think that it's not real. Anything that you can bring up that we may not know about the Sims Gateway project and the opposition that perhaps you've heard?
Yeah, I haven't seen the press release, so I don't really know the specifics here. You know, look, I think this is the pain point of democracy, frankly, is, you know, we need to find some way of all getting to be part of the conversation, to be listened to respectfully, for us to dialogue about what we want. And I'm fully up for that. But I'll also be quite clear, you know, I've received quite a lot of communication from folks who have been opposed to this project. And a lot of it's not actually true. So it's really hard for us to dialogue about stuff that's patently false. And I think being pushed with a bent toward manipulation. And, you know, I could say hand over heart, like, I don't have all the answers. I don't know where this is where we're gonna go, what the opportunities are. I mean, this is something as a community, we take a risk dialoguing about to try to get to a solution. But I think we all have to be, you know, genuinely motivated by the, you know, collective spirit to actually be able to dialogue. And I think those who aren't, I feel like, you know, I've repeatedly reached out to this group specifically and said, let's sit down and let's walk along the corridor. Let's talk about our constraints. Let's develop a, you know, relationship. And they've repeatedly denied that, you know, suggestion that, hey, let's get together and talk how we work together. So to me, I feel like at this point, it's just sort of, you know, it's not a path forward for that I could see a clear opportunity here. I feel like the opportunity is we've never worked like we have with our poor PUD and county agency partners like we have in the last couple of years. We've never been this creative in project funding and probably this transparent about what we know and what we don't know, because a lot of things are changing. And I think for those listening who don't fully understand the scope of the project, you know, I'm with you, because we're trying to evolve this in real time and involve people as much as we can to get to a good solution we could all be proud of in 100 years. But I'll just be honest. I mean, it's very easy to get kind of under my skin on this one, because it's hard for me to have a conversation with people who I know are not representing the truth accurately and perhaps intentionally doing so. I don't have a lot of time for that.
Oh, well, thank you for being upfront and your honesty on that issue. I'm sure that the other side would have something to say. But then again, this is an open forum, and I have you in front of me. And I do believe that all we have going for us is conversation on many of these difficult issues. And I don't know why anyone would turn down an opportunity to have a conversation on this. Of course, I don't know everything. Very clear. So
fine. I mean, I think we'll move forward. I think, you know, we're trying to make lemonade out of lemons here. No one wants to cut trees down, myself included, as a former conservation biologist. So it's not like this is something that gives me any pleasure. It's just more as a community. I think it's very easy to find blocks to change or reasons not to do something. And I guess I would implore all of us, myself included, because I can get a little stuck in my ways, to really, you know, challenge that, to challenge, okay, if we're going to move forward on, say, housing or climate change or inequality, what are kids' experiences like, you know, during the pandemic, we've got to take some risks and actually be pretty gutsy, not be stupid, but to really push the boat out a bit. And I think if we don't, there's 1,000 reasons we can get to no. There's 1,000 reasons to say no against anything. You know, I was on the phone with a Kilmer staffer from DC this morning, and And she was talking to me a little bit about the YIMBY bill that he's pushing through, the Yes in My Backyard. I mean, I like the idea of flipping that on its head, you know, that instead of being against something, yes, I'm for something, willing to take a little bit of a risk and seeing that there's collective benefit in doing so.
And actually, I've seen a bit of that recently. The NIMBY part is to be expected, but I have seen some of that Yes in My Backyard in Port Townsend over some very difficult issues.
Yes.
And it has impressed me quite often, because it's very easy to say no. Sometimes that yes is the harder
decision. Yeah, I think it's a great point, Tim. I think it's partly why I'm here, is that there is so much creative collective energy trying to create and to build, not to dismantle. And unfortunately, some of those voices are quite loud and gather a lot of attention. But I think, you know, I can think of like dozens and dozens of individuals in my short time here that I am just stunned by their contribution toward, you know, advancing this community and our needs into several generations ahead. And I mean, that there's such power in that. If we could all find a place and all agree to some common rules of engagement, then, you know, I think anything is possible. So I'm really excited for that. And that kind of takes me back to the Parks and Rec, you know, hire and approach in the next few years. I mean, that is a huge, big whiteboard of opportunity for all of us to get our markers, our dry erase markers out there and color and doodle and vision. You know, to me, that is our community at its finest.
And it's also an opportunity for when these things do come to fruition, that we can look back. There will always be a certain number of people that say, this is the first time I've heard about this. So I think it's important to make it very clear that plans are in the works. Now's the time to be involved. Now's the time to pitch in, to give opinions before it's frankly too late.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So no matter what you care about. So I want to make sure we have a little bit of time for that question that came through. Tim, I don't know if you want to go there.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah. I just appreciate that Sonny took the chance to write in and ask a question about particularly about, you know, another maybe possible pain point here. the Cook Ave, we talked about it before here, Tim, but, you know, his question really is about the future of any regulations changing, including how we permit things and how we provide for road repair modifications before the approval of large scale subdivisions like the one on Cook. I was paraphrasing his question, but somewhat verbatim. And so I think it's a really great question. And I'm not trying to dodge the visual impacts that people might see going by Cook Avenue or the physical ones trying to drive there or bike or walk or whatever you might be doing. I have often said this was something that went through the permitting process well over a decade ago, but this is also one that's a little complicated in terms of what the city can ask of development. And it's not related necessarily to what we can include in our, you know, municipal code or processes. It's really and it's not even related to state statute. It's related to case law. So the courts have been quite clear that any development needs to have a clear nexus and proportionality. So basically, you know, we can't require a developer to make an improvement on something that isn't directly impacted by that development. One might question why this didn't get over a threshold in terms of impact on the roadway. And I could say, you know, if that was a big trucking company or haulage, you know, industry site that was developed with lots of impact of big trucks on the roadway, I can't imagine it wouldn't be a nexus to the impacts on Cook. But with 70 or so lots, it was determined at the time that there would be no impact to mitigate in terms of the improvements on Cook Avenue. And that's the reason why it's hard to ask, and in fact, impossible for the city to ask developers to make those improvements. Now, I will say, like we've said on Facebook, I went out there not too long ago and met with Bruce Seaton, and he decided voluntarily to make those improvements on Cook Avenue himself. And that's not something he was required to do. One might say he's a community-minded individual and he was thinking forward. But from a legal point of view and a code point of view, it's strikingly difficult for us to require improvements at a specific site unless there's an impact that's clearly documented. That said, we could be talking about how we make transportation improvements through things like transportation impact fees. And council has looked at this recently and thinking about all system development charges and impact fees. And over the course of the next few years, we might want to have that conversation about a community, about the type of fees and associated impacts on things like transportation, or even, you know, the basic system development charges for sewer and water that we might want to leverage to get the outcomes we're looking for.
Oh, well, that sounds like fodder for a future conversation. Traffic impact fees. Thank you for the clarification. Yeah. I think that, you know, most people do understand that there are so many moving parts to development that it's good to have some clarity on that. Before I let you go, Mr. John Morrow, and by the way, you are listening to John Morrow, Port Townsend City Manager on KPTZ. I don't remember where I saw it, and it may have been Facebook, but I do believe that it was a map of Port Townsend that outlined every crash and every traffic accident that's happened over, I can't remember the period of time. It was interesting to look at. It's something that I hadn't seen before aggregated in one place. And as I look down the road here from the studio, I do see that corner with the ghost bike where a gentleman was killed a couple of years back. Mm-hmm. And I do think that it's important to take a look at that map. Have there been any insights? It seems to be, I don't see a pattern particularly, but what did you gather from that?
I think I'm doing it from memory, Tim, so my apologies. I do recall, I think even some council member had a thought about the number of rear end collisions on Sims, for instance. I mean, there are areas that you can see associations with higher volume or, mapping this out helps us give insights into traffic behavior and crashes and, recourse for mitigating or reducing those. I'm just a map geek too. I just love seeing things from the air and seeing how things are, how they look. And I would encourage, I forget, I was going to try to give you which council committee or meeting that was discussed, but surely you can find it on the website. It's an insight into the degree of safety or lack thereof in our community. And I guess my reflection, without trying to just rosy colored glasses it, is I feel like we are not as safe as we can be, and so we're continually looking for ways of making our roadways safer for all users. But we do really well, and I'm particularly encouraged by how walking and biking around our community is quite a bit safer than others. And I applaud those. Yesterday, I was driving back into town, and somebody was doing 19 miles an hour on a 25. And instead of getting frustrated, I was grateful. I thought that's the kind of speed that if there's some sort of mishap, that most people have the chance of surviving. And I'm grateful for people taking their time.
Yes. Well, I did want to mention it because I found it, like you, I kind of enjoy maps, and I liked the way that it was broken down and it showed the number of pedestrian involved, bicycle involved, rear end. It was quite comprehensive and some food for thought for those of us that use these roadways in Port Townsend. So thank you to whoever put it together. And maybe next week I can tell you how to get to it because I frankly couldn't find it again.
I'll find it for you. We'll talk about it next week.
Okay. Thank you so much. John, we're at the end of our time. As usual, thank you for taking time out of your day to put some clarity to what's going on around Port Townsend and to give your honest opinions to the listeners out there.
Thanks, Tim. It's always great to be here, and we'll see you next week.
All right. All right. Thank you, John.
Bye.
Bye.